I'm Nicole.
And I'm Brandon, and this is Spectrum Sessions,
where we talk about all things like diagnosis. We're also therapists who come at this with not only personal experience, but clinical experience as well. Welcome back to Spectrum Sessions. Over the past few episodes, we've laid the foundation to better explain co-occurring and differential diagnoses and touched on the concept of autistic masking. Today's episode is all about autistic masking, particularly in females, and why this complicates diagnosis. We'll explore why masking happens, the negative implications it can have on our mental health, self-screening, and how it can impact the presentation of autism.
According to the National Autistic Society, autistic people have described masking as hypervigilance for and constant adaptation to the preferences and expectations. These could be expressed, implied, or anticipated of the people around you. It's also tightly controlling and adjusting how you express yourself. This includes your needs, your preferences, opinions, interests, personality, mannerisms, and appearance, based on the real or anticipated reactions of others, both in the moment and over time.
So, I think a personal example of this for me is even doing this podcast, like even recording this, I feel like I'm not allowing myself to just be. I feel like I act more excitable and more animated, whereas like if it were up to me, I would kind of just be flat. But I don't think people would like listening to that, right? So I think that I adapt myself to what people would like. And for example, in our episode where we had our coworkers and we interviewed them, I found myself keeping up with the high energy of it all, whereas I'm not a high energy person. And so I kind of mold myself to an individual situation that I feel like I need to be at the same level as somebody else.
Yeah, those are great points. And I think it points to the fact that masking can be so exhausting, especially when you're around people with different energy levels as you and you're just constantly trying to keep up. And that was definitely me when I was in school, high school and really in college. But to the point I want to make now is like, for some people, I think masking can improve. And for me, it has. And part of that is due to the people I'm around. I feel really comfortable around them. And I've created a schedule for myself where it's very predictable. It's very same. And it allows me to, I guess, feel comfortable enough that I don't always have to rely on that masking aspect.
Yeah, that's important, a routine. I think that helps a lot to mitigate. And you say, you know, you feel kind of exhausted after. And I remember, you know, after we ended our interview episode, I said to you, I was like, oh my God, I'm so exhausted. And you were like, me too. So that just goes to show, though, that's just a snippet in time, right? It was something we wanted to do. It was fun. I loved doing it. And it was only like 2 hours of our time. And afterwards, we were like, ugh. Mm-hmm. So, like, imagine how it feels to do that for a work day or, you know, just every day in general in your life. It's so tiring.
Yes, yes. For someone who has autism, picking the right career is so important because there's so many careers that do not lend itself to natural, you know, expression of your autism. And you feel like you have to just keep that in every day. And really, burnout becomes inevitable at that point.
Yeah, very true. We do plan to do an episode in the future on burnout. I think that everyone can experience burnout, but it is, you know, at an increased rate when you are neurodivergent. And I think that that's important to discuss.
There's a William Shakespeare quote from a play. It's called "All the World's a Stage, and the Men and Women Merely Players." And I think that's a really good point to point to the fact that neurotypical people, you know, mask as well. There's roles we play almost like we're, you know, in a theater production, like we're a husband, we're a worker, we're going to church, you know, and we have to fit these different roles in our lives. And that can be exhausting for someone who's neurotypical. But I think the main difference between someone who's neurotypical and masking and someone who has autism is masking is the person with autism feels like if I don't do this, I'm not going to fit it. I'm not going to be accepted. And in some ways, you know, that turns out to be the case, like depending on the environment they're in. And that can be a lot of pressure. For me as a male, one of the things that I do with masking still is I will hide some personality / like quirks, and I won't nerd out on special interests, or I won't talk about random things, and I'll kind of keep those personality traits to myself. But I know there's a lot less pressure on me socially than, you know, females who have autism, and I think Nicole can maybe speak more to that.
Yeah, I could say a lot about this. I think for females, I know myself, I don't necessarily mask my personality. And I think in a way, a lot of people are drawn to autistic females. Like, it's sort of like a, I don't know, it's like a kind of magnetizing thing I've noticed. I think that they really like just kind of how blunt we are. And I think that they kind of take it as like humor, when maybe we're not necessarily trying to be funny. That's just like we're just stating something. And I think that it's so different from like normal society, right? Like, I think we have to kind of, most people watch what they say and, you know, they're kind of afraid to be blunt. But I think autistic females, we kind of just put it all out there. And I think that people are kind of drawn to that. But I think that for us, we mask, you know, our facial expressions, our tone of voice, our body language, we script what we're going to say. I think we take a lot from being around people, media. So I'll even pick up on, you know, the way that people speak and an inflection they might have, or the way that they say a certain word. And I'll keep that with me. It's kind of like going through my life. I take little pieces of other people and I morph it into myself. So I'm really like a million different things in one person. And, you know, even just the way that people dress, or the way that they do their hair, or the way that they, I just watch people. That's what I do. And I think that a lot of females do that. We just watch people, and that's how we learn how to say the right things and, you know, maybe realize what the things that we're saying that are wrong. That's how we realize, by observing. I don't think that we realize the things that we're doing that are quote unquote wrong until we watch somebody do it the right way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does make a lot of sense. And as a guy, I think this is where it really is helpful to talk about sex differences, because as a guy, there's a lot less social pressure when you're out with dudes. You know, you're playing pool, or, you know, going to the bar, or playing video games. Whereas I think females, when you're out with other females, there's a lot of pressure to keep up a certain level of social communication and fit a certain mold when you're out with friends, that I think guys don't have to do. And there's this pressure that I can see would be overwhelming to try to be like everybody else, or, hey, I'm going to be ostracized here.
Yeah, and I think, you know, in the way of, like, topic of conversation or, you know, interests of things, I think that for guys, it's like, okay, let's all go play pool together, or let's, you know, do this together. And then you talk about kind of really whatever you want to talk about. But I feel like for girls, it's like, oh, let's get together and do our makeup and talk about this. And I don't know. It's just a very fake thing to me. Like, I feel like, as a girl, I don't fit in with girls because I feel like it's very fake. That's why I get along better with guys, because they kind of just lay it out there. They like what they like. They do what they do. And it's very direct. Whereas with girls, it's kind of like you have to say the right things and you have to ask the right questions. And I don't know.
No, I want to validate that, because I feel a little bit privileged being a guy with autism. It's like I can just be like, oh, yeah, you know, I just watched a King Tut documentary last night or something like that. Like, you know, cause I'm super interested right now in ancient Egypt, you know, like it's like an autistic type of obsession with me right now. But like, I feel like if you did that, you know, if a lot of girls were talking about like
their boyfriends
or, you know, or some type of like fashion, and you said like, oh, I watched a King Tut documentary, last night they'd say, okay, let's start a group text without Nicole in it, and we're going to meet up next time. Yeah. Oh, well, let's all going to be on our way.
Exactly. Yeah. Got that.
Being an adult with autism, there's such an importance of being surrounded by people who are healthy and encourage you and accept you. And it makes you feel like, oh, I can just let my mask down. I feel heard. I feel understood. And it's such a benefit to be able to have that time where you can just feel like the spotlight isn't on me.
For sure. It is very important. And I think that that's another reason why, you know, we keep our like circles very small. Because I think that there's a lot of factors that go into feeling comfortable around people, and being able to unmask. And I think that, I don't know, for me personally, again, like I was telling Brandon off the recording that I don't think there's a single person in my life that I'm 100% myself with. And I think that for anyone that's listening who doesn't feel like, oh, you know, I don't necessarily have these people that are supportive and that I can fully unmask with, that's okay. I think that sometimes as females, it's just so ingrained in us that we don't know how to not. So something that we want to talk about to people who are listening who want to do a self-screener, or clinicians that are listening and want to give their clients who suspect they might be autistic a screening tool, especially females that are high masking, is the CAT-Q. So that stands for the Camouflaging Autistic Traits Questionnaire. And this, again, like I just said, assesses the level of masking. And there is a high internal consistency, so it is reliable. And the scoring range is between 25 to 175. And the threshold score for this is 100 and above. So there's three different subcategories underneath this test. They include compensation, masking, and assimilation. So some examples of compensation are learning social cues from television, films, or books, like I was just talking about, watching others to understand social skills, repeating others' phrasing and tone, practicing facial expressions and body language. And some examples of masking are, as we talked about, you know, monitoring your face and body to appear relaxed, feeling pressure to make eye contact. Don't make too much, but make sure you make enough. Thinking about the impression that you've made on others. Some examples of assimilation include feeling the need to put on an act, avoiding interacting with others in social situations, performing, not being oneself in social situations, and kind of pretending to be normal. So the average CAT-Q scores for autistic adults for females are 124 and for males are 109. And so something I thought would be interesting for Brandon and I to do would have Brandon take this assessment, because I had already taken it a few years ago when I was going through my formal assessment, and compare our scores. So Brandon scored an 89 and I scored 138. And I also want to mention before we talk about this a little bit, it is important to differentiate that the CAT-Q can also pick up on social anxiety as well. So that's just something to consider when looking at this as well.
Yeah, and I want to say about my score being low, I can't stress enough the importance of being in an environment that allows you to grow and as an autistic adult, and allows you to feel comfortable being yourself. And right now I have a job where I do feel comfortable, you know, being a counselor and meeting with people, other people. And I feel totally comfortable with that. And I feel totally comfortable in my relationship. And when I meet up with other people, I really know them well and I feel comfortable. I am not tested a lot. And I definitely think when I was younger, it would have been, if I took this test, it would have been up to about the 120s. But because I've created this environment for myself and I've been very lucky to be and blessed to be able to do that, it's gone down to a point where I really feel like I can let that mask down and feel comfortable.
Yeah, and I love that for you. And I think that that's amazing. And I think too, you know, you've mentioned, I don't know if you mentioned on the podcast, like the extent, but to me, you've mentioned, you know, the significant social anxiety that you have as well. And you've mentioned that you have that under control now. So I think that that is also something that is lowering your score. And I think that, again, you know, just, I just want to really emphasize the difference between each of our scores and each of our stories, right? So I think that, you know, for me, I still don't feel comfortable working. And for me, I don't think that it's ever going to be something that I feel 100% comfortable in. I think that as a female, unfortunately, the masking begun at such an early age that for me, I don't even know how to go about fully unmasking. And there's a lot of implications with unmasking as well. And we're going to get into that too. But I just want to state that, you know, for females, it's just such a different experience. And that's just really what I wanted to emphasize on this episode.
Yeah, that's very true. And, you know, you brought up a good point about me getting medicated for my social anxiety, because, you know, you brought up that that could affect the CAT Q scores as well. And for me, it was really, I assumed that the social anxiety was autistic symptoms. And it's very hard to separate those without, yes, you know, being able to eliminate the anxiety aspect and then fully see, okay, this, the rest of this is autism. But, you know, if you are someone that you feel like anxiety-wise and social-wise that you are, you know, feel like you have a huge deficit, and, you know, looking into medication can absolutely be worth it. And Nicole, I wanted to ask you, so how long have you been diagnosed with autism again? How many years?
Almost four years.
And really, in the whole scheme of things, that's
not long.
Very, very small.
Yeah.
it's very hard to get your head around an autism diagnosis and what it means, and especially with the pressure of being a female and having to communicate in a certain way. And do you feel like you've made, I don't know, strides in, I don't know, feeling more comfortable with yourself and masking wise, you know, over those 4 years?
Maybe not masking, but as you were asking me that, I was shaking my head, because I have made strides in, you know, we talked about on a previous episode, kind of setting boundaries and not pushing myself past my limits. I think that that is the most important thing that I've been working on. Because for me, I am so high masking. So I think that people feel like they can keep piling things on me and that I can handle it in the same capacity as somebody that is not autistic. And that is just not the case. And I'm kind of getting better at putting my foot down and saying, no, these are my limitations. And even if you think my limitations are ridiculous and I should have more capacity, I don't. But like you said, it is still a very new diagnosis. And I think for me, I hope that I get better at learning to unmask a little bit. But it's definitely going to be a process.
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a challenge and definitely a process. You're absolutely right.
Something that I touched on a little bit earlier was discussing the implications of unmasking. So I do think that unmasking is a wonderful thing, but I also think that along with it, there's certain environments in which it might not be safe to fully unmask. For example, if you are struggling at work and you finally get your autism diagnosis and you think, okay, this is amazing, I'm going to unmask and be my complete self, and I'm going to tell my boss, my coworkers, I'm going to tell everybody that I'm autistic and I'm protected by the ADA, and that's it. Unfortunately, we are not there yet as a society. I think that there's, unfortunately, still a lot of biases and a lot of discrimination towards autistic people and any neurodivergent folks. I don't think that it's always safe to do that. I think that there are bosses that are understanding and informed, and I think that it could be a positive thing for you, but just know that it might not be. I think, too, even with family members, right? Like, if people have this outdated preconceived notion of what autism is, and you're telling your 85-year-old grandfather that I'm autistic, it might not go over that well, and it might sever your relationship, honestly. I think that people need to think about the negative outcomes that can happen, and it's very unfortunate. I wish that it was not this way, but it unfortunately still is. So I think that you really have to do yourself a favor and think about the implications. Is this person really truly safe, and how is this going to impact our relationship long term? Because after you share this information, you are still going to have to interact with that person or that place or whoever you're informing about your diagnosis.
Yeah, you're making really good points about the difficulties in having formerly Asperger's or formerly high-functioning autism, where you're in the middle of being able to, you know, interview well and appear to be able to do a job, and enough deficits that it can make your life really difficult, like sometimes a living hell, depending on how toxic the work environment is. And you feel this enormous amount of stress when things just start to pile on and pile on and pile on. And like Nicole said, you don't even have the comfort of always feeling comfortable telling your boss or your supervisor. And that definitely can be hard. And like, again, we talked about in previous episodes, you know, counseling is a really great place to air that out, you know, because you can feel so alone.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, there's other avenues that you can explore, such as support groups, like Brandon is running a support group right now. I think that those are safe spaces. And, you know, online communities, those are usually safe spaces. So just be careful about, you know, who you're sharing with.
So there are like tiers of masking when you have autism, you know, tiers of like how challenging it is to mask. And I think one that's like up at least towards the top is masking your sensory issues. For me personally, I have really bad sensory issues to loud noises. And when I was like growing up in many teens and 20s, I felt this enormous pressure, and pressure is a word we've been using a lot in this session. And I think that goes with masking very well. And I would just hide it. And I would even like say, oh yeah, let's go to a concert, or, oh yeah, let's go to this bar where there's live music. And I would be suffering. I would be in my own head. I would be unpleasant. And I would just feel so much pressure to act like, oh yeah, things are going great. I have a beer. And I think outwardly I was like showing those signs of just not being well. And inwardly I was like, oh yeah, I'm faking it. I'm doing well. I don't know. Nicole, did you ever have experiences like that?
Yeah. I think I don't fake it very well myself. I think that's hard to do as an autistic person. And I think that, again, too, why people, you know, get misdiagnosed or they miss a diagnosis is because we're not always in these environments, right? We're not always at a loud bar. We're not always at a concert. We're not always at a wedding. We're usually in smaller situations. So people don't see the ugly side of us, I like to say. So for me, I do have like a bad attitude when I'm very overstimulated and people are like, what's wrong with you? I think that for me, as a female, it can be perceived as, oh, well, she's just a B word. You know what I mean? But they're not looking at the context of why I'm being a B word.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally relate to that.
Yeah. And I know you, and I know you're not the B word. And I know that, what you're being perceived as is maybe making an impression on you as like, oh, you know, maybe I am being a B word, and it's not you being a B word. It's you being perceived as a B word. That's the only problem. And you're not alone. I get this sense of like resting B word face,
yes.
Whereas like when the sensory issues like reach overload and I'm just like out and people just start looking at me like, whoa, what is going on here? And I'm, you know, and it could be when I'm with friends or people I care about. And I'm just like thinking in my head, how can I not let people see my face. I'm like, can I, is this like a party I can put a mask on or something, like a literal mask? So yeah, no, I totally empathize. And I think a lot of people with autism feel this way. Like, absolutely. You know, it's just like, you've got to hide what's going on inside. And that is really hard.
And I think there's a funny meme that has gone around that's basically like, how do I explain that, you know, I'm overstimulated by the tag touching the back of my neck of my shirt and somebody's talking in a obnoxious tone and I can hear the electricity humming. And like, that's so relatable, because a lot of the reason why I feel overstimulated, nobody else around me understands or senses. So for them, it's like, why are you being so nasty? I'm like, you don't hear these 7 things going on in the background? And they're like, no.
Yeah, and that's, and we talked earlier in the episode about the importance of surrounding yourself with good people, considerate people, healthy people. And that's where it really comes in, is when you have something that most people don't get, like a tag on the back of your shirt or a live music band or, you know, people whispering over your shoulder or like little sounds or little sensory issues that most people wouldn't get. People who are considerate will get those. And if you're lucky enough to have people in your life that are like that, really, really spend time with them.
That wraps up this week's episode of Spectrum Sessions. Thank you so much for joining us. If you found this episode helpful, please consider subscribing, leaving a review, or sharing it with someone you think might benefit from it. We love to hear your thoughts and feedback. Reach out on our Instagram page or Spotify page and let us know what resonated with you. Remember, be kind to yourself and to one another, and as always, stay curious.